are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. We've got 99 problems, but football ain't one. As week one is here, we're about 48 hours away from the first National Football League game of the season. The Denver Broncos hosting the Carolina Panthers. Of course, a Super Bowl rematch. We break it down with Dave Malinsky. We were with you yesterday on Labor Day. No rest for the wicked. And we told you that Florida State were going to be a dangerous team. Unfortunately, I also told you it was going to be a lower scoring football game. Never again do I take an under in a football game. But that's besides the point. We're going to have a ton of stuff to get to on the program. A ton of football, and more football. NFL football, college football. College football, NFL football. Maybe a little Major League Baseball talk. Cardano's got a couple of baseball picks for us. I got a full slate of baseball picks for you. But as far as the content of the show is concerned, Dave Malinsky will talk college football and NFL football. Mike Cardano, we're going to talk NFL football with a couple of baseball picks. And Howard Balzer, my boy Howard Balzer, balzerfootball.com right now. Howard's been around so long, he probably, he's proud that he was like on ESPN on day one. But that was a long time ago. But Howard, one of the best in the business, been around forever, been joining me for years on various stations over the years. Howard Balzer joins us from St. Louis to talk some NFL football. So we've got you covered. And I'll tell you what, if the preseason and week one of the college season is any indication of what 2016 is going to be like, it's going to be off the freaking hook this year. Off the hook. An absolutely insane week one of college football and a pretty weird and strange preseason. A lot of injuries, trades, suspensions. Nothing's ever set in stone. We're a couple of days away from the first week of National Football League games, and there's a lot of question marks, man. We got quarterbacks that are just getting thrown in. We got other quarterbacks that aren't getting thrown in. And, we've got another quarterback that got thrown under the bus, but suddenly he's been pulled out from under the bus. Is Colin Kaepernick survives the firestorm. Dak Prescott could be a household name if he plays well over the next couple of weeks, and he might be the future quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. Sam Bradford's a loser, all right? Sam Bradford's a loser. He's like really? There should be an arrest warrant for Sam Bradford. Nobody has stolen more money from NFL teams and given back less. Yeah, Jamarcus Russell sucked, but he didn't hang around a long time. Ryan Leaf was a bust. Ryan Leaf didn't get $78 million. I don't understand it, man. People just keep giving money to Sam Bradford. He survives. We'll talk about that. But I'm more amazed that Colin Kaepernick can survive this firestorm. I really am. Especially with the 15th anniversary of 9/11 coming up, I was thinking, man, there's no way in hell the San Francisco 49ers want this dude anywhere near the field as the season approaches. But the San Francisco 49ers and the NFL probably suddenly don't have a problem with Colin Kaepernick. As it turns out, only two players are selling more jerseys right now in the NFL than Colin Kaepernick. The leading NFL jersey seller this year, Ezekiel Elliott. Dallas Cowboys, everybody wants an Elliott jersey. Number two, Odell Beckham Jr. Yeah, makes sense, dude's flashy, badass, great player, plays in New York City, all right, makes sense. Number three, yeah, it makes perfect sense that the backup quarterback of the piece of crap San Francisco 49ers is, this dude's so bad he can't beat up Blaine Gabbert for the starting quarterback position. And he's selling more jerseys than anybody else, even that cheater Tom Brady, who didn't know that the NFL decal wasn't on his sticker. When Colin Kaepernick was asked about his socks and about states, he just said, I didn't know what was on my socks. Really? I had no idea. I don't know. Tom Brady, I got to tell you, Tom, I'm a Michigan guy, so I know you're a smart guy because I know it's a good school. And I know you're a smart guy because you got hundreds of millions of dollars, you got a hot wife, and you're an awesome quarterback. But for such a smart guy, you don't seem to remember anything very well. You're like Hillary Clinton, 39 times to the FBI. I don't recall. So I don't know. Hillary Clinton's either a liar or she actually is messed up in the head and has concussions. You can't have it both ways. But the National Football League, they can have it both ways. And while they can sort of frown and say, well, we don't really like what Colin Kaepernick is doing, the NFL only cares about the bottom line, all right? The NFL won't let players walk onto the field wearing Beats by Dre headphones because they have a rival sponsor, yet they'll let Josh Norman bring a baseball bat onto the field and threaten Odell Beckham Jr. before the game. Why do they do that? Because that's not costing them money. You know what I mean? It's not costing them money. They suspend players for weed right now. Guaranteed, you will see NFL-sanctioned water bongs and pipes. I tell you, you'll be smoking a bong in a Pittsburgh Steeler bowl in a couple of years from the official NFL gift shop, all right? The NFL doesn't give a crap about anything. They're like us. They just want to make money. Game Time Decisions on a Fantasy Sports Network continues. All right, let's do this thing. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. We are live. I'm sort of recovered from our trip to Las Vegas, Nevada. I was in like three different time zones, though, in a one-day span. I just stopped looking at the clock. My body's sort of out of sync. I keep thinking it's like Wednesday, but it's only Tuesday. It's one of those type of deals, man. I've just been thinking about football so much. And all I know is that Thursday night, the NFL season starts with the defending Super Bowl champion, Denver Broncos. Dave Malinsky will join me straight from the strip in Las Vegas, Nevada in a couple of moments' time. And I've got a lot of interesting numbers for you as far as Super Bowl rematches in week one. When a team plays in the Super Bowl, teams play in the Super Bowl, and then they play each other in week one of the following season. It's only happened six times in the past, and I told you guys before, Todd Collins and the Buffalo Bills actually beat Troy Aikman and the Dallas Cowboys in this spot. I think it's like the only game Todd Collins ever won as a damn starter in his life, too. So crazy stuff happens in week one. Let's bring in Mike Cardano, Roto expert, Fantasy Sports Network's very own Mike Cardano. What's going on, Mike?
What's going on? You ready for some football?
Yeah, I miss you. What's going on? You're on the phone today. No Skype today.
Yeah, I had some internet problems. I wasn't going to let you down, though. I'm here.
No, here. I love, as you say that, you hit the keypad. Yeah, we had some internet problems. No, it's good to have you here, Mike. I'm excited. Week one of NFL football. Our boy Drew Livingston's busting your balls right now. He's like asking about the Jets. I think they're only going to win four games this year.
Oh, come on, Drew.
Four games. I was going to save that, but get it out of the way first. He says they're only going to win four games. I said I think the Jets are overrated coming into this year, but that's a little excessive. Four games. They're going to win more than four games.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of crazy. I think that's...
How many games?
Drew's got an agenda here.
How many games do you think the Jets are going to win?
I'm going to go 10.
Ooh, 10. That's a little ambitious, Mike.
Listen, the Patriots, they're all hurt. They got nobody left over there. This is the year that the Patriots, everybody's picking them. They're locked for the Super Bowl AFC. This is the year that finally this come. I it would not shock me. I'll go out on a limb here if the Patriots do not make the playoffs.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say I will not be shocked if Fireman Ed and you and all the other Jet fans are hating Ryan Fitzpatrick by the end of the year, thinking that he scammed you.
Well, to me, the defense is where the Jets are at. They have the great wide receivers, and, you know, if he does anything, you just got to manage the game.
All right, so let's talk about the Minnesota Viking situation. They're on their third quarterback of the year here, Mike, and they haven't played a damn game yet. Bridgewater, is going to be Sean Hill, and now Sam Bradford's in. And as crazy as it sounds, they're saying that Sam Bradford might start this week. I don't think that's going to be the case, but they're splitting the reps right now. Like, Zimmer must just think that Sean Hill really sucks or something. He must see something that we don't, because I got to tell you, Mike, I don't think that Sam Bradford's any better than Sean Hill. Maybe he could be better. Maybe he's a better athlete. I hear that Bradford's a good golfer. Good for him. He's a crappy NFL quarterback, and they're insane. Like, listen, they're going to be a decent team anyways, so I don't know. It's a late first-round pick it'll turn into, I would imagine. But, I don't agree with what they're doing. I think the Eagles won the lottery in getting out of this Bradford deal.
Well, Gabe, you know, the line for the game really hasn't moved much with the change in quarterback there. But the line for their odds to win the Super Bowl did. They were plus 2,800. Now they're plus 2,000. So, this has looked as a positive step in them in the right direction. So I disagree with you a little bit. I think that Bradford does have some talent stuff. He's not anywhere near of what he's been getting paid. Nor was he ever, but I think they have a great defense. that they do have a fighting chance to make the playoffs and do something this year.
They're a good football team. I thought they could make the playoffs with Sean Hill. I wonder if they can make the playoffs with Sam Bradford. Bradford made the playoffs once in his career. Well, was he a rookie that year? They made it when the NFC West, it was like the worst division in the history of football at the time. And they made the playoffs. They might have been 7-9 even. Maybe it was 8-8. But, you know, Sean Hill is 17-18 as a starter in his career. Playing with a bad St. Louis Ram football team and playing on a Lion team that wasn't all that good. Basically playing in garbage time. 17-18 record. How about this? Sam Bradford's won 25 games in his entire career, yet he's made $78 million. The guy's made over $3 million a win. How about this? In his entire career, Sam Bradford has thrown for 300 or more yards 12 times. To put it in context, in the same span, Tony Romo's done it 46 times. Carson Palmer's done it 43 times. Sam Bradford is like one of the biggest stiffs in the history of the National Football League.
Gabe, the real winner in this trade here to me is the Cleveland Browns. So, you know, nobody expects Wentz to be able to do anything with the Eagles. And the pick there that they traded will turn into a first-round pick for the Browns, a pretty high first-round pick. You know, the Browns, other than the guy that they took this year, have nobody since 2011. Not one first-round pick is still on their team. Nobody.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
So this really could work out best for the Browns, this trade.
All right, and speaking of which, you actually think the Browns can beat the Eagles this week?
I think that's a tough spot for Wentz at home in Philly for his first game. I don't really know what the Browns are, but I don't think that Philly's going to be able to do much of anything in game one here. This guy was laying on his belly hunting geese 2 days ago. Now he's the starting quarterback in the NFL. I just don't see, especially week one, maybe in the second half of the season, something. To me, this is the appropriate time to go with the Browns as a road dog away from the pound.
I look at this game and I just sort of think of like that show Hardcore Pawn, like in Detroit, and you see like the crazy chicks fighting in the parking lot with each other. Like, this is like, you know, you're betting on people fighting in a parking lot outside a liquor store when you bet on either the Browns or the Eagles in this game. But it's interesting. I tend to think, actually, that Ryan Matthews can run the ball down their throat and the Eagles can play ball control and have a better defense, than the Cleveland Browns do. And then conversely, the Browns are just going to be throwing bombs on every play. That's what they're going to do. I think Terrell Pryor could actually have a pretty good fantasy day on Sunday, Mike.
I don't know. I just think this is the spot. More than anything, I think it's a tough spot for Carson Wentz this week to be opening at home. He did not go this whole preseason thinking he was going to be the starter. There's no way he's up on the playbook as he should have been. He thought he was probably going to be number three going into the year, maybe 2 weeks ago. I think this is a tough spot for him. I think it's the hard for him to perform really well. Comparing to Ben Roethlisberger, his first NFL home, I think this is going to be tough.
Mike, where you're cutting in and out a little bit, I don't know. I don't know if you're in an elevator or a hallway, but cutting out a little bit. All right, Cowboys, Dak Prescott. There's talk in Dallas right now about Dak Prescott and, oh, if he wins, whether you know, they should let Tony Romo play. I saw that Kalashaw was talking about, maybe it's over for Tony Romo. I'm not buying into this. You know, I knew he was going to be out 6 weeks. They're already saying, oh, it's going to be 8-10 right now. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. I don't think Jerry Jones is going to throw him under the bus immediately. For Dak Prescott to really steal this job and for Romo not to be the quarterback of the Cowboys anymore, I think he'd have to be like 8-2 or something like that. Like, if they're at even 6-4, Romo's getting his job back.
You know, Gabe, you can go on the internet, read an article anywhere about the performance of anybody who was drafted at his spot. The closest person who had any success at all was Kyle Orton, and statistically he was awful, but the Bears were able to win. I don't see any chance in the Cowboys being a playoff team if he plays eight games or so.
You know, I think Dak Prescott's going to be fine, actually. I don't have a problem with Dak Prescott. My problem with the Cowboys is more their defense. in which Prescott's going to have a hard time if they're trailing and they're in the track meet games. They're going to have to play a ball control style offense and try not to fall behind. But my biggest concern with the Cowboys right now isn't the quarterback this week. It's with Dez Bryant this week. And Cameron One's a big Cowboy guy, so I don't know what the deal is with Dez, but he's questionable right now. Or at least, you know, he's got a concussion. If Dez Bryant doesn't play this week, I don't see how they beat the Giants.
I don't see how they beat him either way. He's going to be seeing things. You know, he's thrown, I don't know, how many, eight touchdowns, no interceptions. He hasn't seen anything yet like he's going to see in the regular season. He has not played regular season football. There's no chance that he does anything remotely like he did in the preseason or in the regular season. None. Zero. Zilch. Nada.
All right, let's talk some baseball, Mike, before we let you go. We got the Mets and the Reds, man. You gave up. You know, I thought you were a real homer, Mike. You gave up on the Metropolitans about 6 or 8 weeks ago. Yet here they are right now. Yet who would have imagined it that both the Yankees and the Mets would both be in a pennant chase as they are right now, or at least a playoff chase, let's call it a wild card chase, so to speak. But, you know, the Mets have won 12 straight games versus the Cincinnati Reds. They're 9-2, their last 11 games in Cincinnati. They've won 7 of their last 10 overall. The Mets are rolling right now.
Yeah, you know, for the Mets, more than anything, it's the opposition, the teams they play. They're the easiest schedule in Major League Baseball remaining. They only play one team that's over 500. They do have a realistic shot of making the playoffs, not because of who they have, because of who they're playing. I can't see them doing anything in the playoffs unless they get some of these starters back. But they do have a chance of getting into the playing game.
All right. So you like the Mets tonight, and we got the Jays and the Yankees. What's your take on this game?
Today's going to be the Jays night. I don't see that young pitcher getting past the Jays offense tonight. I know the had the Jays number a little bit here, but today the Jays is going to go on.
You know, I'm not in a hurry to lay this one, Mike. I know I like Sanchez, but I'm not in a hurry to be laying 49, 50 cents on the road in this spot. I don't know much about Sessa. I know he gives up a lot of home runs, but I also know he's 2-0, and the Yankees are just 3.5 out of the wild card spot here right now. Jay's sort of scuffling along. You know, they're 8-8 in their last 16 games. I think the number's too high here, Mike.
I really do like Sanchez today. Listen, for Yankees, he's pitching really well right now. I think today's the Jays night. I think you'll get away the money.
All right, Mike Cardano with us. All right, Mike, I don't know what's worse, whether we have to actually see you on Skype or we got a bad cell phone connection. It's like we got to pick our poison with Cardano right now. But thanks for joining us, Mike. We'll catch up with you next week.
All right, I'll get this straight now. Sorry about that.
All right, go Bengals. Go Bengals. I don't think he got that on the way out. Yeah, I don't know. Where's Mike? At a Sheryl Crow concert or something? I heard some chick singing in the background. I heard like sirens. And all right, there's Mike Cardano with us. It's going to be a hell of a lot more tranquil with the next guest because Dave Malinsky lives at the Las Vegas Country Club in Las Vegas on a golf course. And there's no noise allowed. All right, Malinsky joins us next. All right, let's send it straight to the Strip in Las Vegas, Nevada, where we were, although not really, actually. To be honest, the furthest I made it on the Strip was the SLS Casino, a brand new spot. Used to be the Sahara. I miss the Sahara. I miss the dollar beers. You know, I don't really care about dollar beers and 50-cent hot dogs and 50-cent blackjack and all that type stuff, but it's part of the culture of Vegas. And, you know, you sort of see, like, a lot of big cities become homogenized and they become just Starbucks and puppy stores and baby stores, and you lose the vibe of the neighborhoods. Vegas is sort of that way right now. I found that being in Vegas. And I love, you know, I know Vegas very well, but being there again recently, I hadn't been there since the Super Bowl. I see it even changing even more, becoming more and more corporate. But with that being stated, the SLS, a very nice spot, nice sports book in like in a restaurant sports book type area. Very, very nice, bright screens. Will Hill sports book, and I tell you, the SLS is like a poor man's area or something, in which it's classy as hell, yet it's empty. So they want you in there. There's no attitude. You go in there. I enjoyed hanging out at the SLS. I wasn't planning on hanging out there, but I actually made it my spot. I went twice. I was only there for 2 days, and I went twice to SLS, so I must have liked it. Let's bring in Dave Malinsky, who is the preeminent expert on Vegas. Lived there for, I believe, about 25 years now. Dave, it's always a pleasure, sir. How you doing?
Yeah, in fact, I can look out my window and see the SLS, but part of the issue they're facing, and you'll know this because you lived in the neighborhood also, it is designed for a weekend crowd.
Yep.
They get that weekend crowd, and then Monday through Thursday, you could roll a bowling ball through the place and not hit anything. That's what you have to deal with.
You know, I noticed that, Dave. I saw, like, their pool party area was very packed. They had, like, a big singer, Tanisha or something, Tanisha, whatever the hell her name was. But, you know, the place, the pool was packed and everything. But you're right, Dave. Even on Saturday afternoon, the casino was rather empty. But as far as being an establishment, the sportsbook area was nice. Not very big lineups. The casino isn't crowded. They had $10 minimums for the blackjack tables. Even on a Saturday night, man, I was finding tables for $15. And it's a very nice place. But they can't cop the attitude that I'm sure they wanted to, Dave, when they opened the spot. And another thing, like you said, the area, they want people that go to the Cosmopolitan to go there. You know, they want the good-looking hipsters and the pool parties and the hot girls and stuff. But those people don't want to be caught dead on Sahara Las Vegas Boulevard, Dave.
That's it. You know, when you're at the Cosmopolitan, a woman in heels can get to a lot of places by walking.
Yeah.
Heels won't get you anywhere from the SLS, and that is that problem. You don't make it a part of an evening, because from the SLS, let's say up to where the Cosmopolitan is, that's half hour, 40 minutes in Saturday night traffic.
You're right, Dave. You know, I was with the lovely lady, and I tell you, you know, we walked, we were at SLS, and the plan was to hit the Strip, and it was just too far. It was like, you know, maybe we can go over to the Encore or the Wynn, but yeah, it's just a little bit of a trek. I'm not a big Strip guy, but I just wanted to say SLS. I didn't stay there, but the casino and the sports book is a cool place to hang out. So, Dave, I watched the game that I watched there actually the most was the late game, the BYU-Arizona game. BYU gets it done. Very, very interesting week one of college football, wasn't it? And props to you. Last week you told us about the South Alabama game, plus 28 at Mississippi State, being a game that you had circled. And I tell you what, they won the game outright at 30-1 underdogs on the money line. DeAndre Francois steps up last night after a rocky start. What's your quick takeaway from week one before we move forward?
You know, something we all have to adjust our attitudes on. Back-to-back nights, you see freshman quarterbacks step in high-pressure settings against really good opponents. Just play flawlessly. Yeah, I mean, imagine going in last night if someone said, okay, one of these quarterbacks is going to turn the ball over four times and the other won't. And it was the senior with the four turnovers, the freshman with none. It's some of these high school programs that play the up-tempo spread offense, they really get their quarterbacks ready for college ball. So we saw Bouchel, you know, Sunday night. We saw Francois last night. In the future, we're going to realize these kids really can step right in.
You know what I liked about Francois last night was the poise. But there were a couple of times, Dave, when nothing was there and he ate the play. You don't see that from kids. You know, generally, you don't see that from a lot of adults in the NFL quarterbacks. But he just showed a poise, and not just the calmness, not the panic when they were down, but he showed a poise when plays broke down. Yeah, he would run for it sometimes, but he wasn't overly anxious, Dave. Like you said, he looked like a veteran in there.
And especially given the scoreboard. You know, it's one thing to be patient when it's a competitive game, but when you're down big and you still don't panic, and you stay inside of what you do, that's a real good sign. Something we have, guys in the betting community had talked about a couple of weeks ago, is that Sean McGuire's injury was probably the best thing that could have happened for Florida State. Even though he had the experience, Francois didn't, McGuire didn't bring upside. Now, if you're Florida State, you wake up today thinking, we can win the national championship. And I'm not sure you could have believed that with McGuire.
Yeah, camera three, Drew's right now. He's not happy. He's a Clemson guy. You're right. You look at Francois, the arm strength, throwing the ball down the field, aggressive throws, throwing into coverage. Very, very impressive. All right, Dave, so let's get to some games as far as this week is concerned. Dave writes a daily column over at pregame.com. It's refreshed on a daily basis around 11:30 noon Eastern time. Yesterday, you were talking about Scott Frost, former Nebraska quarterback, was the offensive coordinator with the Oregon Ducks for the last couple of years in the post-Kelly era. He wants to run that fast tempo offense in Orlando with Central Florida. So he's now the coach of Central Florida, and he wants to become the Oregon of the East, so to speak. And as you wrote, Dave, so they ran 91 plays versus South Carolina State. Last year, they averaged 65 plays per game. And it reminded me of when Doug Marrone took over as head coach at the Buffalo Bills. He said, you know, we got to go faster, and I'm going to run a no huddle, and we're going to go fast. And we had E.J. Manuel at the QB, and you know what happened, Dave? We just went three and out fast. You know what I mean? Like, going fast, like, isn't good if you're no good. Like, you've got to, like, you know, have a couple of plays that you actually run well before you can start going fast. Otherwise, you just go three and out real fast, and your defense is on the field, and the other team scores real fast. I loved one of your quotes in stating, if he does this in Ann Arbor this week, it's football suicide. Your take on this, Michigan laying 35, people bet it down from 38.
Yeah, it actually becomes a short 35, because if Frost is indeed going to play fast, and I think he will because he wants recruits watching. Here's the backstory on this, because people don't think of Central Florida, you know, as being a football power. Well, Central Florida is the biggest university in the United States in terms of enrollment, and they've got a chance right now to work their way into the Big 12, which would be a real feather in their cap. So what Frost wants to say is, look, we're going to play fast. We're going to be the most exciting team in the country. He can recruit better that way, and if they get into the Big 12, Central Florida becomes a football power. He may get annihilated this week, but maybe the smartest thing to do, get annihilated playing fast, because guess what? If you play slow, you're going to get beat up anyway.
What about the athletes, though, Dave? As you mentioned, I mean, Central Florida, it's not like, yeah, they're down. They're not as good as they were from a few years ago with O'Leary, but without being stated, you know, Michigan laid pretty much the same number. It came down from 41 to about 38 against Hawaii. I would assume the UCF have much better athletes than Hawaii does, yet it's the same type of number. Can the athletes hang around with Michigan just, you know, from their skill alone?
You know, the problem is they're more skilled than Hawaii, but these are athletes recruited to play a different system. O'Leary wanted to play power football and play slow. So these aren't really the guys that are going to fit Frost's system. And even Frost's first year of recruits weren't great. What he's doing now is he wants to put on a show for current high school kids and say, guess what? Come over here and play, and you're going to play the most exciting football in the country. If you do that in Florida, you can recruit without ever leaving the state. You could fill an entire roster of playmakers just from the region.
Dave Malinsky joining us straight from the Strip in Las Vegas, Nevada. All right, speaking of Scott Frost, let's talk about his former club here. Dave, interested in your take in this football game. I was at the D actually earlier Saturday morning, and a lot of the locals were crying about the Oregon Ducks not covering the number and not blowing out UC Davis like they should, and it was a lot of points. And then conversely, you got the Virginia Cavaliers. Bronco Mendenhall is now the coach there. They lose 30-27 to the Richmond Spiders. I didn't notice that. I caught up with that after the fact, Dave. You know me, I'm a degen, so I actually bet some FES football. And the Richmond Spiders aren't a terrible football team. Is this an overreaction with the point spread? And two questions I have. Is it an overreaction if Virginia lost to Richmond? Because Richmond aren't that bad, and Richmond had this game circled, obviously, being an interstate game. And then two, is 24 and a half too many points for an Oregon team that aren't Oregon anymore, Dave. I don't know if people realize this. The Ducks aren't the Ducks anymore, Dave, and I think they'll be exposed eventually as this. What's your take on this? Because I feel like 24 is too much here, but I'm counting on, banking on the athlete factor. The Virginia have the athletes that can hang around, and at Oregon just aren't that damn good. What's your take?
Well, part of this is similar to the Central Florida game in that Robert and I is the offensive coordinator of Virginia. He went along with Bronco Mendenhall. He also wants to play lightning fast. It's a better way to recruit, get some more talented kids on campus, but if you're going to play Oregon at Oregon, fast is playing right into their hands. And that's what I'm going to be reading about between the lines before I make a call on that game. If Virginia goes up there and plays fast, they could play a decent game and still get beat 58-28.
Yeah.
You know, they could play pretty well and still not cover.
What if they play ball control and try to run the football, though, Dave?
That's the thing, though. Ball control keeps it closer, but that's not installing the program you want. And literally what a coach is supposed to do, if you can't win the game anyway, and if you're a dog in the 20s, you know, you're not expecting to win the game. If you can't win it anyway, for Virginia, losing by 20 instead of 30 doesn't really mean anything. But what could mean something is we're going to play fast. Come and join our program next year. Something people don't realize, coaches are recruiting. Every play they call on the field, they're recruiting when they call that play.
That's a good point, Dave. They're better off losing 51-29 than they are 38-7, aren't they? Because at least you're right. You got a high school coach, you got a high school receivers are watching the game and thinking, yeah, they lost, but hey, I'm going to catch eight balls if I go play there.
Yeah, because here's the thing. Your defense can get annihilated by Oregon, but if you score 30 points, all those high school quarterbacks and wide receivers you want to bring in, they don't care that your defense gave up 60.
Exactly.
They do care that your offense scored 30. You want to put the show on for those kids.
All right, quickly, Dave, on Northern Illinois and UCF, USF, and then I want to get into the NFL because we only got about 4 minutes left here. This line shocks me a little bit. I mean, the Huskies have always been the power of the MAC, you know, solid program, Big Ten light, so to speak, against South Florida, who, similar to Central Florida, you know, built up, were suddenly this power. I mean, there were a time, Dave, remember when they were, what, ranked second in the country under Coach Leavitt? And then he grabbed some kids in the locker room and freaked out and wanted to start punching kids over performance at halftime of a game once, and the wheels fell off. But I'm just shocked to see the number here in this game, and I was somewhat surprised to see you think the favorites to play.
Yeah, let's talk about them in the context of Central Florida. South Florida brought Willie Taggart down there because he'd always been a good recruiter in that local area for the other places he coached. So look at their game Saturday. Seven different kids scored touchdowns, every one a local Florida kid. They have a lot of talent. They call it the Gulf Coast offense. So they're not saying they're emulating Oregon or anybody else. They're saying, no, this is what we do. We're going to be the fastest. I think the Northern Illinois kids wear out because it's the worst setting for any team in the country this week. That game at Laramie against Wyoming last Saturday not only played at 7,200 feet, you know, the highest elevation of any line team, but the kickoff got pushed back 2 hours because of a lightning storm. The game for the Northern Illinois kids ended at 3:25 a.m. Sunday morning on their body clocks. So now it's a tough trip back home. Then you got to turn around and go down and play in where it's going to be a lot of heat and humidity in Tampa. I think Northern Illinois just gets worn out here, and the much faster team makes a lot of big plays.
Dave Malinsky with us, right, Dave, in our remaining moments. Let's blast through some NFL football. I remember the old days when it was basically you played against the Super Bowl champions in week one, that the point spread was going to be overvalued, the number was going to be too high, the public's always on the defending Super Bowl champion, etc. But the fact of the matter is, I'm thinking about the 90s and the 80s as opposed to the modern era. Since 2000, Super Bowl champions are 14-2 straight up. in their openers. They're 10-4 against the spread with two pushes. There's been six Super Bowl rematches in week one. The Super Bowl winners actually 4-2 in the rematch. Conversely, Super Bowl losers week one since the year 2000, 5-11 against the spread and 3-12-1, 5-11 straight up and 3-12-1 against the spread. A lot of numbers telling me, Dave, you know, I lost with Carolina last year. I was thinking about the Panthers. We talked about this game briefly last week, but I'm looking at the best defense in football, getting points on their home field. What am I missing in this game?
Yeah, I mean, here's the unheard of part of this. The Super Bowl winner as a home underdog, you know, to open a season. But there is a perspective to it. You know, when Denver got to the Super Bowl last year, in the playoff game, they were a home underdog against New England. In the Super Bowl, they were an underdog against Carolina. So it's not like the line has shifted. Denver wasn't perceived as the best team last year. Here's the big thing. Trevor Siemian might be okay later, but is he ready now? You know, is he ready for this pressure? Is he ready for the Carolina defense? I don't know. I just don't know what sort of upside he has. His college career wasn't long enough to really get a good feel for him.
Dave, all right, we got about 30 seconds. Anything else in the NFL catch your eye? Do you like anything else? Can you throw us a bone on the way out here?
Yeah, I want to play against Buffalo early. I don't like this defense. Lorenzo Alexander is starting at outside linebacker. That's not what Buffalo had planned after draft day. So I think Buffalo gets out of the gate slowly on defense and loses to the Ravens.
Yeah, linebacker's a big problem. Dave, you're the best. Check out Dave's column over at pregame.com. He's always giving picks and opinion and answering people's questions in the chat as well. Thanks, Dave.
Good luck, everybody.
There's Dave Malinsky with us. Man, he's taking the Baltimore Ravens. Ooh, as a Bill fan. Tell you what, though, man, the Bills, we could have a problem stopping a run, man. That linebacker core is pretty thin. Howard Balzer joins me next. We talk more NFL football. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Man, this show is really flying by. That's what happens when you're having fun, and that's what happens when you talk NFL football. Let's continue talking football with a man who's been doing it for a long time. Howard Balzer's been joining me for a long time. We encourage people to check out balzerfootball.com. Howard, it's always a pleasure. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. I'm doing great. Anytime on a Tuesday, you can say there's real games that begin in a couple of days, that's a good day.
That's right. We're about 48 hours, give or take, a little more than 48 hours away, Howard. So it's like Christmas Eve, so to speak. But first things first, you're based out of St. Louis, so I want to ask you, what's the feeling like there? I know, I'm an Expo guy, man. I was the Expo's post-game show host. It brought a tear to my eye. I was there the last night. And it, you know, it's hard to put into context, but I've lost loved ones and stuff. And losing a franchise at times really can't feel the same way. It's such a big part of the city that, you know, it's tough after. What's it like now in St. Louis? Are people like, screw the NFL? Because I know in Montreal, people are like, I'm never watching another baseball game again, like, let alone a Washington Nationals game. What's the feeling in St. Louis? Are people like, I hope the Rams go like, you know, 0-16 in L.A. and screw them and screw the league? Or is it just life goes on?
It's a combination of all of that. I mean, you know, I get this question a lot, and it's not as if you can take, you know, a city of, you know, this many people and then everyone has the same way of thinking. And so there's certainly a lot of people who are rooting for them to do really bad, nothing against the players, but more against the organization and how duplicit they were throughout the entire process. I'm sure there's some that, you know, there's a certain, you know, age group that the Rams, like my son is in that age group. He's going to be 21. It's the only team they've known. And so that makes it a little different. So I'm sure people who grew up with them still, you know, have more of an affinity than many of us who have been around a while and have seen St. Louis lose another team, almost get an expansion team, lose that. And so, they're, like I said, there's a lot of different ways that people are feeling. And, you know, people are still going to watch the NFL. But I don't know, obviously it won't be with the same amount of passion unless it's for their fantasy football team or they bet on a game. But, it's going to be a very interesting season just to really judge, and especially from TV ratings and all that. You know, two of the local, I know you want to talk about some other things, but the Fox affiliate in St. Louis and the CBS affiliate each televised preseason games of the Chiefs on the CBS affiliate and the Bears on the Fox affiliate.
Yeah.
And they got, you know, okay numbers. Granted, they're only preseason games. So it's going to be interesting to see what kind of ratings they get for the regular season games, which obviously begins on Thursday night.
Yeah, that's a great point that you raise, actually, Howard, in which it's split up into different demographics, right? You've been around. You were there pre-Rams, and like a lot of guys, probably grew up Bear fans at the time, or maybe Chief fans. You're right. And then you got the younger generation that, you know, those Rams teams, that's all that they know. It is. It's fascinating, and people don't really understand until it happens to your city what it actually feels like. So I wanted to get your take on Sam Bradford. You saw him play up close. I'm looking at some of the numbers here, and I don't know if it's fair to break him down from the amount of money that he's made, but it's hard not to look at some of the dichotomies here, Howard, in which, you know, the $78 million salary, you know, 25 wins, over $3 million per win. You know, he's only thrown 12 games, and he's had 300 yards in his career. In the same span, Romo's had 46. Like, you know, we go down the list, and you know, the wins, the completion percentage. I don't know if a guy has made so much money producing so at an average level that he has. You've watched him. Are you a defender? Are you a basher? Where do you stand on Bradford, and what do you think of the Vikings deal?
I've been labeled a defender mainly because, I mean, certainly the money and all that was the product of being the first pick in the draft. Whoever has picked the first pick in the draft is going to get all that money. And that's what he got. The obvious point is he was the first pick in the draft because he was going to a bad football team. And when you go to a bad football team, it's awful tough to lift that team on your shoulders and do it yourself. I don't think there's a quarterback alive that can make bad football players better or make a team automatically better just because they're a good quarterback. And the reality is, that his rookie year, it was funny. He was offensive rookie of the year with a 72 passer rating.
Yeah. I mean,
he wasn't that good, but they improved from one win the year before, and all of a sudden they say, "Oh God, he's on the way."
That was when they made the playoffs, right, Howard? They made the playoffs in his rookie year, right? Was it 7-9 or 8-8?
Well, they almost did. They went into the last game of the year at 7-8, and if they had beaten Seattle,
and
they lost, and so Seattle won the division, and the Rams were 7-9. Had they been 8-8, they would have won the division. It was a bad division, and that was a part of it as well. And so, but there was really hope he was going to develop. And then next year was the lockout year, and things went bad. There were a bunch of injuries that they had, and they didn't play well. The head coach was fired. Then Jeff Fisher came in. And he was starting to play pretty decent again. And then the ACL injuries came up. I mean, he missed a year and a half because of injury. And so I think the guy's got ability. Here's the amazing stat. And this I wrote. You mentioned ballsorfootball.com. I have two masters now. I'm also writing on a website through Cox Media called all22.com. Since he's been in the NFL, since 2010. So this will be his seventh season. This will be his fifth head coach, his fifth offensive coordinator, and his sixth quarterbacks coach. And so when you have that instability, it's awful tough to achieve, especially when you're not playing with a lot of really good players. And he's never had a top receiver. And now he goes to Minnesota, and there's going to be an adjustment period, obviously, but they've got Adrian Peterson. They've got some pretty solid receivers, a real good defense. He's not going to be asked to do a whole lot coming out of the box. The guy's a very accurate quarterback. The biggest issue with him has been his health. And if he can stay healthy, I think he can be a winning quarterback.
Not to mention Norv Turner. Yeah, Norv Turner. They obviously like him. To give up the picks, they must see a lot of the stuff that you just talked about as we're in conversation with Howard Balzer, balzerfootball.com, and read his work at all22.com as well. All right, Howard, so we've only unfortunately got a couple of minutes left. Time's flying by here. But I want to get your take on week one as the season approaches and maybe a couple of teams that catch your eye and maybe who you're most looking forward to seeing. And we have one team I like in the NFC. I actually think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to be pushing for a playoff spot this year. I think Winston is going to take a big step up. I like the Dirk Cutter hiring. I like the buzz of what's going on in Tampa, but they're a little bit, you know, they're a little bit lower down the ladder than what's going on in Oakland right now, and they might be Las Vegas in the future. But I've got the Raiders circled to beat the Saints this week. But I know my producer spoke to you before, and we want to get it for the graphic purposes. But you're pretty high on this Raider team too, aren't you? Like, I know it's always hype in the Raiders, but there's actually substance here, isn't there, Howard?
It really is. And when you start breaking down that team with a quarterback in Derek Carr going into his third year, really good receivers, a solid offensive line, defense looks really good led by Khalil Mack, and they pick up Bruce Irvin. The big question with them is the running game. I'm an old school guy. I still think you have to be able to balance the run with the pass. Latavius Murray is solid. Whether he can carry the load is a question. They're going to be counting on a couple of rookies. DeAndre Washington, a fifth-round pick. Keep an eye on this guy, Jalen Richard, an undrafted free agent from Southern Miss who's opened some eyes in the summer. So, but you're right. They have substance to them. And in a division where you'd think that Denver – we'll take a step back. The Raiders can make some noise here. And going to New Orleans this weekend, I think it's an intriguing game. And I tell you, I like the Bucs too. They're in a similar situation somewhat to the Raiders because they go on the road to play a division rival in Atlanta. And so those could be really key games for those teams to win one on the road, which obviously is tough to do in the NFL, especially in a home opener. So I'm very intrigued by those teams and to see what they'll do this week. And, you know, like I said, you know, you go with Drew Brees, a crazy Superdome is probably going to be an unbelievable type of atmosphere. And the Raiders' history hasn't been very good when they travel two or three time zones. Because let's remember, when you're playing that early game, your body is telling you it's 10 a.m., which is pretty early to play a game, especially what time you have to get up and get over to the stadium. Partially, they haven't been good in that because they haven't been a good team. We'll see how good they are this year, and I think this game is a heck of a test for them.
Yeah, if I was the Raiders, I'd already be there. It's so important to get the season out. I'd be, hey, I don't care about the hotel, guys, all right? We're getting there Wednesday. Hey, Howard, I got to get out of here. We're getting the hook here. But great stuff as always, sir. Thanks a lot for joining me. I look forward to doing it again.
Take care. I always enjoy it, man. Take care.
There's Howard Balzer with us. Take a quick break. We'll come back with our plays of the day. All right, it's time for our plays of the day. The New York Mets and the Cincinnati Reds. What the hell is this? You mean the New York Jets and the Cincinnati Bengals? They're actually playing each other this week. Be patient. Couple of more days, all things football all the time. Tonight, we're going with the Mets and the Reds under 9. Finnegan's been lights out. Last three starts, opposing hitters are only hitting like 132 against them. Montero hasn't been bad. Give me under 9. Royals and Twins. Why are the Royals underdogs against the Minnesota Twins? Like, really? Seriously, the Twins are terrible. Give me the Royals. Tigers and White Sox. Similar situation. Tigers playing good baseball. Remember I told you before the year started, the Tigers are going to go to the playoffs? They're going to win again tonight. They're going to beat the White Sox. The Angels. The Angels blow, but they're pretty streaky. And right now they're hot. They're like 9-1 of their last 10. They've been on a roll, and they're going to beat the Athletics this evening. We wrap it up with the Giants and the Rockies. Giants can't hit the baseball. Tyler Anderson's actually better than people realize. Under 11 other night. You're on your own. May the winners be yours.